Hello, and welcome to the Self Seekers podcast. My name is Satwa, and I'm here to support you with the psycho-spiritual tools, techniques, and teachings for your consciousness journey. Let's begin. Hey guys, welcome. So if you were following me on Instagram last year, you probably knew me as Mindfulness with Satwa. Because when I first started showing up in the world as a teacher, I was teaching mindfulness. And in this episode, I want to talk about why I made the transition from mindfulness to seeking with Satwa and the difference between those two schools of thought and how they each approach meditation, spirituality, and self-development, and hopefully give you some new perspectives to think about. So mindfulness is a really broad understanding of our connection between the mind and the body, right? So 2,500 years ago, when Buddha laid down the foundation for mindfulness in the Satipatthana Sutta, not sure if I'm pronouncing that correctly, maybe it's Satipatthana. Not sure, but it's an ancient text that contains his discourse. And in this, he talked about the four main components of mindfulness, which are the body, including the breath, sensations or feelings, mind or consciousness, and mental objects. So broadly speaking, mindfulness is really an awareness practice, right? It's a practice of bringing attention and awareness to various thoughts and feelings and sensations that are constantly rising and falling within our inner landscape, so to speak. Without, the important part is that we do this without passing any judgment or having any sort of narrative around them. So right now I have awareness of the fact that my mouth is moving as I'm talking. I'm aware that the tips of my fingertips are cold. I am aware that I just had a passing thought that I should maybe turn the heater on and so forth. So with that said, I'm just going to pause for a second to take one big mindful breath, and you're welcome to join me. So hopefully if you joined me for that breath, you would have noticed that in those moments of breathing, there were no thoughts, hopefully. You were fully present to just your breath. The breath was all that existed in that moment. And this is why we practice mindfulness, right? So that we can become more present to the moments of our lives, so that we can truly live in the moment and accept the moment as it is. So just a quick overview of these core principles of mindfulness. We have the mind-body connection, awareness of the present moment, and basically non-judgment, which is acceptance. So body-mind connection, awareness, and non-judgment. And all mindfulness-based practices kind of revolve around these core principles. So we have popular practices that have to do with watching the breath, body scan meditations, walking meditations, eating meditations. I mean, those are the popular technical ones. But really anything can become a mindfulness practice so long as you're doing it with full awareness. And this really happens when we integrate the mind and the body, right? Because the body is always in the present moment, but the mind is usually off somewhere in the past or the future. It's the monkey mind, right? So these mindfulness practices help us tame the monkey mind and integrate ourselves in the present. So that's kind of the general overview of what mindfulness is as a practice. But really what it comes down to is it's really a lifestyle. So when we take mindfulness-based practices out into the real world, it helps us be more intentional and purposeful in how we relate, right? How we relate to things, people, our environment, how we relate to ourselves. And it's also a wonderful practice for coping, not necessarily coping, I don't really like that word, but rather managing, right? Managing negative emotions, negative thoughts, negative mood states, navigating sort of the turbulent waters of our inner landscape. It's often been described as becoming the surfer, right? Sort of surfing the waves of our emotions and not drowning in them, so to speak. And mindfulness teaches us how to respond to our inner turmoils and conflicts by witnessing our emotions in kind of a detached way. So rather than reacting to them, we develop this capacity of being the witness or being the watcher, right? And we master this through practice. It's really a skill that you develop over time and get better and better at, okay? The skill of being the watcher. And the metaphor that's often used is the image of sitting at a riverbank and watching your thoughts and your emotions and sensations in the body just kind of drift by, or your thoughts being like clouds drifting across a clear blue sky, right? This might sound familiar to you if you've practiced the basics of mindfulness. And over time, you learn how to create space between your emotions or your thoughts and your reaction to them. And in that space, what you discover is this capacity to not identify with whatever sensations are arising. So, for example, you recognize that you are not your anger, you are not your sadness, you are not your depression, you are not your anxiety. So that's kind of like the final stage of mindfulness, this non-identification with your mind. So those are sort of the seven pillars of mindfulness. So you start with the basics, which is mind-body connection. Then it's awareness of the present moment. Then you practice non-judgment and acceptance. And then once you've started, sort of gotten the hang of the foundation, then you get better and better at being the watcher or the witness of your thoughts and emotions and not identifying with your mind. So that's kind of the gist of what we mean when we're talking about mindfulness. And of course, there are a number of tools and techniques that help us, that support us in our practice. And if you were following me on Instagram or Facebook last year, I created a lot of my content around this, around using mindfulness as a self-healing practice, and particularly, you know, the techniques that have helped me, with really practical things like quitting smoking, to more abstract things like having more compassion towards myself and others. And I'm certainly very, very grateful that mindfulness was introduced into my life when it was. And like I said, it's helped me and it still helps me, and it helps millions of people around the world. It's a practice that can be done anywhere by anyone. I mean, I could go on and on about the benefits of mindfulness. It's a really beautiful, profound practice. However, you knew that was coming, right? However, it's not enough. As a lifestyle, as a general approach to life, mindfulness is perfect. Mindfulness is all there is. But as a self-development tool, it has its limitations. And I experienced those limitations firsthand during a training that I recently participated in when I was in India called Who Is In. And this was based on a Zen method of self-inquiry called Satori. And basically the purpose of the training was to learn this specific technique for knowing yourself and knowing the true nature of who you are. And at first, in the training, at first I was using like a mindfulness approach. I was putting like a mindfulness spin on it because that's sort of what I was used to. But then I quickly realized that I was completely missing the point and I course corrected, right? And mindfulness, it helps us to master our mind and gain mastery over ourselves, but it doesn't help us get to know ourselves. Okay, the self-inquiry piece of it is hugely, hugely missing. And that's because there's not a really big opportunity in mindfulness-based practices to work with our shadow. That's what it really comes down to. It sort of bypasses the shadow parts of our being, right? It's very much this approach of going towards the light. Okay, cultivating loving kindness, meditations for compassion and oneness. And these are not bad. Obviously, these are beautiful practices, but they're not self-inquiry practices. And when we talk about knowing ourselves, knowing yourself, knowing your true nature, you can't leave out the shadow parts because we are both the shadow and the light, right? So self-inquiry practices as opposed to mindfulness practices help you systematically, intentionally, methodically explore your shadow. And it's a little bit more advanced of a practice. That's why the foundation of mindfulness has to be there, because you really have to know how to hold space for the shadow and maintain space from the shadow so that you can witness it as you are experiencing it at the same time without getting triggered, because shadows are obviously very triggering. So here's an example. So let's say you're meditating and you're watching your breath and you're watching your emotions. And let's use the example of feeling anger, right? So you're sitting, let's use the visual of sitting at the riverbank, watching your thoughts and your emotions, and you get this negative emotion, call it anger, and you start thinking about whatever triggers you. So something maybe that your partner said that really pissed you off, and you feel that surge of anger arising in you. Okay, so now mindfulness would say, just watch it. Watch the anger, maintain space from it, don't identify with it, maybe repeat a mantra like, I am loving kindness, and eventually it will pass. And yeah, eventually it does pass because emotions are like that. Right? They come and go. Now, as I said before, you might get better at managing your anger, and that's certainly very useful, but will that help you get to know your anger? Will that help you understand the root of your anger? No, because you're just being a passive witness sitting on the riverbank going, that's not my anger, that's not my anger, that's not my anger. But it is, right? It is your anger. You are not your anger. The nature of your being is not anger, but that anger is coming from somewhere. And the only way that it's ever really going to go away is if you get really close to it. Is if you know it really intimately, like your best friend, right? That's the only way that you can actually get into it and pull it out by its root. So mindfulness would say watch. Self-inquiry would say jump. Jump into the river. Jump into the emotion of anger. Don't just passively watch it pass. Get up, gather up some courage, and jump. Become the anger. Allow the anger to completely take over your whole nervous system so that you can ask, what is that? What's happening right now? Where is this coming from? Right? And it's tough. It's tough to do that because we tend to get carried away by our emotions. That's why I said it's more advanced, because you're both the experiencer of the emotion. You're the one experiencing anger, but you're also the one witnessing anger. So you're the experiencer and the witness at the same time. And in Zen, we call this the point where the subject and the object collapse. And when that happens, you kind of fall into a paradox. Okay, you just fall into this place where the mind can't really understand what's going on, because our mind doesn't think in paradox. Our mind doesn't understand paradox. So it kind of shuts down. Okay, this entire CPU, central processing unit, shuts down. And then what happens after that point is a great big mystery. So, if you're feeling a little bit stuck or dissatisfied with your mindfulness practice, if you've been doing all the things, reading the books, meditating 20 minutes a day, using affirmations, using manifestation, all the stuff that's like, you know, touted to us by 90% of spiritual teachings out there, and you're still not finding more peace within yourself, if you're getting triggered, if you're getting frustrated by the lack of clarity and insight that you're hoping to gain from these practices, first of all, I totally understand, because that happened to me. And what I can offer as a solution and what helped me was working more with my shadow and incorporating more of my shadow into my spiritual practice, asking myself harder questions, challenging what I think I know or what I'm so sure of. Right? Even taking a step back from teachers and gurus that I really admire and questioning it, questioning all of it. I mean, there's nothing wrong with questioning it. You don't have to agree or disagree just by the nature of a question, right? It takes some courage, because you have to not be afraid to admit that maybe you're using your practice as a form of escape or denial of issues that really need your attention, which was what I was doing. I was sitting there focusing on my breath and watching my anger rather than confronting it, you know. And what happens is that it just gets suppressed, and it eventually rises back up and comes out in more unconscious ways. So keep asking, keep questioning. Don't become complacent and lazy with your practice just because some teacher or master has told you that this is the way, right? Find your own way and be honest with yourself. Is this really helping me? Why am I investing so much time into this practice? What am I trying to figure out or find out? What am I trying to avoid? These are the questions that we need to be continuously asking ourselves so that we don't stagnate on our journey and fall into the trap of appeasing our spiritual ego, because we all have a spiritual ego, that thinks it knows everything. Okay, there's always so much left to discover. And my Zen teacher says, when you think you know, you're fucked. Because the truth is that we are as mysterious as the universe and we don't know. And so the questioning never ends, the seeking never ends, the discovering never ends. And that's what makes this process hopefully fun, right? So I would also suggest doing inner child work, because a lot of times whatever issues that we've sort of stuffed down stem from childhood. I have a great free ebook, a guide that I wrote for working with your inner child that you can download from my website. I'm offering this tool for free because it helped me so much. There are 6 amazing practices in there for connecting to healing, reclaiming your inner child. That inner child work helps us explore those core wounds, right? Those parts of us that have been lingering in the shadows since childhood. So once we bring it to light, we confront it. And just by doing that, we grow. We grow, we evolve, we mature. So keep asking, keep checking, keep exploring. And if you need any support or guidance from me, you can sign up for my email list through my website. I send you a personalized email once a week. You can sign up through my website at seekingwithsatwa.com, or you can find me on the gram or Facebook at Seeking with Satwa. So thanks so much for hanging out with me today. Make sure you're subscribed to my podcast so you don't miss future episodes coming at you every week. Bye.